Welcome to the program. The government's framework for sustainability is Executive Order 13514. President Obama signed it October 5th, 2009. Today we're going to explore that executive order, find out what agencies are doing to comply with it, and what the future holds for sustainability in the federal government. My guests today to talk about it include David Fricke. He is the CEO of Eco Electric. Craig Hooks, Assistant Administrator in the Office of Administration and Resources at the Environmental Protection Agency. Jonathan Powers, Federal Environmental Executive in the Council on Environmental Quality at the White House. Andrew Wakefield of Lutron Electronics, and Thomas G. Day, Chief Sustainability Officer at the United States Postal Service. Gentlemen, thank you all for being here today. Mr. Powers, we'll start with you. Talk about this executive order. What pushed the president to issue this order, and where it's come from since then, please?
That's a great question, Francis. First of all, thank you so much for having me. We've got a fantastic panel here today, and I think we're all sort of excited about the incredible progress that the federal government has made in this area. You know, I look at this executive order from a little bit from a personal experience. My first day when I showed up to my unit in the Army, when I was a fresh lieutenant coming out of college, I showed up and I had a wonderful platoon sergeant who had been 17 years in the military, knew all about where we're going, the work we had to be doing, and here I was with very little idea of what I was supposed to be doing and in charge of this unit. And he grabbed my lapels and he dragged me around to the side of the motor pool. And he said to me, "Sir, there's two types of leaders in the military. There's those that lead by rank and there's those that lead by example. The soldiers are going to follow those that outrank them because they have to. But they want to follow someone that sets a standard, sets an example." And President Obama understands leadership by example. And so when he put out this executive order, you know, he's set some wonderful and aggressive goals for the federal government in areas of energy and sustainability. And he's called on the government to step up. And what has been really interesting about this executive order, working with guys like Craig at EPA and Thomas at the Postal Service, you know, you have a fantastic amount of enthusiasm across the federal government. You know, and I think you know this better than anybody. The federal government is we have 500,000 buildings, 1.8 million federal employees, enough to fill the Washington National Stadium 43 times. We have over 600,000 vehicles, and we spend more than $535 billion a year. So this is a pretty strong undertaking for us. But we've seen great progress, great enthusiasm, and we have leaders like Craig and Thomas at the agencies really moving forward with sustainability plans that are relatively new because of this executive order, helping to drive the path forward so that all the way down the ranks, people understand the steps they need to take to make their agencies more sustainable.
Craig Hooks of the EPA, you have a dual role in this, in that you work with the agencies to help them comply with this executive order, and you also have to comply with it within your own agency. Talk about that dual role and how you're trying to comply with this EO on two tracks.
Well, I think it's an easy track for us, an easy task for us, in large part because it's part of our mission. We principally concentrate on a variety of topics that actually are outlined in our sustainability plan. That's one of the requirements of the executive order. But we are going to concentrate, and we work with other federal agencies on greenhouse gas reductions, water conservation, fleet management, energy reduction, high sustainable buildings. And so we have a variety of work groups that we co-lead in some instances with some of our interagency partners, working on water work group, looking at federal facility siting issues, transportation issues, fleet management issues, water conservation issues. So there's a lot of work both internally that we do to meet all of the goals and objectives of the executive order, plus working with our federal partners.
And the agencies are coming to you and asking you for input on the areas in which you have expertise. What's that partnership like today, 3 years or so after that executive order?
I think it's continuing to get stronger and stronger. I think, you know, as we learn from each other, you know, we're taking the lessons learned from all of us, and it makes things easier. I think, you know, there's a variety of technical working groups on a variety of subjects, and we take the best of what we can bring to the table. And I think we're becoming more and more efficient over time.
David, when you look from the outside in at what the federal government is doing here, how does it compare with what you see some customers that you have in the private sector and so forth when they're trying to work on these sustainability issues?
Well, the last 2 years have definitely seen a great increase in initiatives by the federal government. We have, in the commercial sector, been doing this type of work for going on 10 years, and earlier on in the early 2000s, it was largely started by corporate initiatives and goals to just simply reduce utility costs. But in the last 3 years, we've seen some fabulous projects. We're the guys in the trenches. We're the guys that implement the policy and try to come up with creative solutions for achieving these goals. So that's been a combination of lighting control, lighting, use of technologies, frequency drives from motors, renewable energy, solar thermal, and photovoltaic.
The idea of the Postal Service, Tom Day, being involved in a sustainability initiative, on the one hand, the issue, of course, is energy. On the other hand, for you folks, it's money. Talk about the turning point where you started to see a return on investment rather than just an investment in sustainability efforts.
The reality is, for the Postal Service, we saw that right away. We've been involved with environmental issues and sustainability for a long period of time, but we formalized it with the creation of a sustainability office back in May of 2008. But it really does reflect efforts that go back way earlier than that. The reality is, there's always been a very tight relationship between doing the right thing in terms of sustainability and environmental needs, but also building a solid business case. And some of our most successful issues have been around energy consumption and greenhouse gas emission. We've done energy audits at all of our major facilities. This goes back in a 5 to 7 year time frame, really applying some very basic technology based upon those energy audits, whether it's updated lighting, updated heating and ventilation systems. All of those things put together have provided us the ability to reduce energy intensity, save the money from that, and have the benefit of what it does to the environment by reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So we get it all in one: the right thing for the environment and a solid business case that makes it work with good returns on investment, very solid returns on investment for the Postal Service.
Andy Wakefield of Lutron, for a long time, that business case wasn't the focus of sustainability in government. Sustainability was this thing that kind of sat over here, and people paid attention to it when they had a chance while they were busy doing whatever it was the mission of the agency was. In addition to this executive order, what else do you think, if anything, tied all of that together and really focused agency attention on this?
Well, I think it's completely transformed how industry has actually approached it. As the money was funded in the stimulus programs and things like that, it really required us to respond with lower cost, more easily retrofittable technologies that allowed us to get to the payback numbers that, you know, from 2 to 4 year payback, where they can start seeing a positive return on their investment. And we got pretty aggressive. Some of the technologies came down 50% in cost.
The idea of the business cases, Jonathan, what does that mean for the agencies when we're looking at the kind of budget situations that we're looking at right now?
You know, Francis, in the time when we are definitely facing some fiscal constraint, you know, the president has fully recognized that and has actually challenged the agencies themselves to look at alternative or third-party financing opportunities to do this. For instance, back in December, he launched a challenge for the agencies to come up with $2 billion worth of energy savings performance contracts. And over 22 agencies committed into this. We've seen tremendous strides. They're making great progress. We're on track towards that goal. And then he also stepped back and said, you know, it's not just the federal agencies that have to be doing this. He called on the private sector, and over 60 partners signed up through the Better Building Challenge, universities, cities, local governments, to be part of that as well, and really trying to look at how to take advantage of the energy efficiency opportunities that are out there. And there are folks that are willing to finance, and obviously there's a good business model for them to be doing that as well.
Craig Hooks of EPA, you're nodding your head as Jonathan's talking about that. You sound like you know what he's talking about a little bit.
Well, I do. I'm actually very excited. Just this last week, we actually offered a solicitation for an energy service performance contract to do some work at our Edison lab in New Jersey. We're hoping to install some photovoltaics out there in our lab. Hopefully we'll get that return on the investment as soon as the contract period ends. So it's a win-win for us.
Yeah. The idea of being able to turn these around, what impact has that had on other agencies that you're working with too, where you can go to them and say, this is not something that is going to be a 5-year, 6-year, 10-year return. This is something you're going to see by the end of a budget cycle or two.
Yeah, well, that's been huge for us. In fact, that's in some respects that's been a limiting factor. Some of the return on the investment, you know, sometimes can accrue over a 25-year period. The fact that we've got these energy service companies that are willing to come in, install the equipment for free at no charge to the federal government, and at the end of the service period, you know, all of those costs accrue to the federal government. Again, it's just a win-win. I think there's a lot of excitement the fact that we've gone out with this solicitation. I think DOD has been doing this kind of work for a while, but this would be a first opportunity for some of the civilian federal agencies to move into this type of arrangement.
Thomas Day, do you see that being a fit for the Postal Service at some point?
Well, Francis, the Postal Service is in a unique situation right now, unfortunately. Our financial picture is up for grabs right now. We're working with Congress and the administration to come up with a solution. Unfortunately, we just defaulted on some payments for retiree health benefits, and our cash flow position is a little difficult. So without getting too deep into that discussion, the reality is it is a bit difficult for us. So we stay on top of what the technology is, and when we finally get resolution to this issue and the cash flow situation is better, we're ready to go.
The opportunities that exist, though, are not going to go away. So when you are in a situation to do that, it sounds like you have a tremendous amount of opportunities to do and plenty of facilities that are ripe for this kind of opportunity, too.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing for the Postal Service is we're primed and ready to go. We've got to get through this cash flow situation we're in right now. But whether it's more efficient energy systems for our buildings, as well as a real concern about our fleet and making sure we're more fuel efficient, we keep in touch with the technology so that when the situation gets to a point where we can make those investments, we're ready to go.
How do you prioritize the fleet element of it? There are a number of different opportunities for fleet economization right now, different fuel sources and so on. How do you go through the process of evaluating each of those so that when the time does come, you're ready to make an investment the right place?
Sure. For the Postal Service, our delivery fleet is very important. And when you think of what is the core competency of the Postal Service, it is just that. We go out and deliver to 151 million addresses every day, 6 days a week. So that is key to us, and so that delivery fleet is very important. The reality is that delivery fleet right now is about 20 years old. We know we need to replace it. We stay on top of technology. We've experimented with everything from electric to hybrid to hydrogen fuel cells to variations on compressed natural gas, liquid natural gas, everything else. We want to stay on top of where the technology's going because when the time does come, it's a huge investment. We have 140,000 delivery vehicles. So to replace that fleet, we're talking something that's probably between a $4 to $7 billion investment that will take a couple of years to do. So when we're ready and the financial position allows us to do it, we need to be sure that we're picking the right technology. And we stay in the game.
John Powers, one of the things that strikes me as I hear Craig and Tom talk about these numbers is just the numbers, the sheer quantity, the market power that the federal government has to go in a particular direction. How do you stay mindful of that at the and be careful about choosing one technology over another and really evaluating them on the merits and so forth?
That's a great question. And you know, one of the fascinating things that energy and sustainability has allowed the different agencies to do is really work together and take advantage of experts that exist throughout the federal government. For instance, the EPA and the Army have a memo of understanding looking at water. And the Army is taking advantage of the fantastic experts that EPA has to figure out how to address some of their bases are going to towards net zero water, for instance. The Department of Energy and the Department of Defense have a memo of understanding, which has developed a whole series of partnerships where you're taking the fantastic innovation coming out of DOE, and the military is looking at how to operationalize this. And so, you know, I think those partnerships are really key for us to figure out what the best technologies are to go forward. But, you know, I think what the tools that have been using for energy savings performance contracts or, for instance, the power purchase agreements that are moving forward at DOD. DOD is committed to 3 gigawatts worth of renewable energy by 2020, much of that through third-party financing. And what they're doing is they're committing to buying power from a private entity that's building those solar arrays or wind turbines or geothermal plants. And that's relying on the private sector to be working towards the best technologies. Instead of us picking a technology, we're saying, look, we're going to buy this amount of power from you. Figure out how to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And there's been a hunger from the private sector to tap into that.
David Fricke, do you see that, what John is talking about? Do you see that happening in the private sector?
Yeah, absolutely. The power purchase agreement is just a fantastic vehicle for renewable energy, and making it viable in terms of its payback. I think there are plenty of investors that would like to see the stability of the SREC protected, and I think that we would, with that, see much more investment from the private sector in power purchase agreements. Also, the energy performance contract, great vehicle, paid back on the energy savings over time, and is just another example of what I think is the future of this business.
You know, Francis, I think one of the fascinating things that we're learning is that, you know, the federal government's not doing this alone. There are a lot of wonderful private sector companies that are leading forward, not just for the environmental impact, because it's economically viable, and we're looking to learn from them. For instance, one of the things we host as the Federal Environmental Executive is the GreenGov Summit Symposium. In September 24th and 25th here in Washington, we're bringing together the public and private sector folks to talk about how we can learn from each other facing these major challenges.
Andy Wakefield, we just have a moment left, but as you hear the people on this panel talking about all of these issues and you think about going to other government agencies and answering their questions, what are some of the tough challenges that agencies have worked through or maybe are still in the process of working through when it comes to meeting the terms of this executive order?
Well, it comes down to cost and the fact that the buildings are existing. You're not going to be tearing down buildings and putting up new buildings, so how can you get the advanced technology integrated into an existing building in a cost-effective manner? And what we've seen, and you've already heard it discussed a little bit today, is there's been a really good partnership between industry and government in this area, and they really are learning from each other. One of the unique things is I head up our government business at Lutron, but I get asked to speak a lot at industry events, not government events, because the industry is actually trying to learn from government in this case. And it's been a really interesting synergy to see.
We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We're focusing on energy sustainability in the federal government today and the compliance with Executive Order 13514. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.